Welcome to today's edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast.
Welcome back to the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. This is Buck. I am coming to you live from Las Vegas, Nevada. My man Clay Travis coming to you live from Nashville, Tennessee. And got much to discuss with you this hour, including the Biden agenda, a possible wealth tax from Janet Yellen. Well, she's saying that it will be a wealth tax, but a tax on the wealthy is how she wants to phrase it. We'll talk about it. Biden agenda hanging in the balance right now. Some last-minute negotiations underway. $1.5, $1.7 trillion, you know, whatever it ends up being. It's going to be a lot of money. And they're hoping that this will save a floundering Biden presidency thus far. So we'll be getting into all that. But first, we have the continued fight against COVID madness. As I said, I'm here in Las Vegas, Nevada, and there are mask mandates in place in the casinos, which just seems to me to be beyond belief.
I mean,
everywhere you go, they're harassing you to mask up, even though these places are vast or cavernous, and you're sitting there smoking, gambling, drinking, but you better put your mask on. Even if you're vaccinated, they don't care, which is a shame, but it just goes to show you that there are these lingering COVID theater that I would call it. I mean, it's nonsense what's going on. And you also have Dr. Fauci, who has come under some real scrutiny recently. He has gotten away with openly lying to the American people. He lied to us about masks by one way or the other. I think he actually lied when he said that he believed masks to work, because there are dozens of studies peer reviewed with control groups stretching back for decades showing that surgical masks against respiratory viruses do basically nothing. But okay, we're supposed to forget all of that because it's a security blanket and a control mechanism, and Democrats embraced it as part of their campaign against Trump, and then it was something they could never get rid of afterwards. But then Fauci said maybe no holidays. Then Fauci said maybe you were going to have no ability to, or you shouldn't have any ability to go to football games this summer. If you were college football games, at least, that was going to be a super spreader event. People have started to realize a lot of politicized decision-making from this guy. And then, Clay, there's this study that I understand it doesn't involve humans, and it has nothing to do with COVID.
Yes.
But the NIAID, National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, NIAID, which is directly under Fauci's purview, it's a subset of the NIH, the National Institute of Health, spent millions of dollars on a research project, if you can call it that, in Tunisia, where they took beagle puppies and they remove their vocal cords and they let sandflies eat their faces while they were alive. I mean, it's so horrific. And I've got people texting me saying this is monstrous. Millions of dollars of U.S. taxpayer dollars under Fauci's aegis of NIAID going to this. Is this finally too far? Like, is this going to be the thing that makes people think differently, at least, about Fauci?
I would love to see reliable polling on Fauci over the past several months. Because I think what we have seen is now without Trump there, people are starting to recognize that Fauci is a disaster who wouldn't have said that if Trump were still there. I mean, Buck, think about what the media would be saying about the COVID vaccine if Donald Trump were still the president of the United States. Think about what the Democrats would be saying about the COVID vaccine if Donald Trump were still the president of the United States. This thing and what we have been told the selling points are for the COVID vaccine has exploded in a negative way, right? Because you just have to track what Dr. Fauci himself was saying. In May, all of the mask requirements are gone. If you get vaccinated, you can live a totally normal life. A couple of months later, they walk all that back and they continue to put new implementations of regulations in place. And I think it's important to note that Florida, which has been the state where they have tried to go after Ron DeSantis over COVID more than any state in the country, Florida right now, Buck, has the lowest COVID infection rate of any state in the country. It is half the rate as Florida right now. Half what is going on in California, for instance, according to the New York Times database, and half New York. And those two states have got COVID vaccine passports. They got people wearing masks indoors like crazy. And yet they have double the COVID infection rate right now of Florida, because what DeSantis brought to bear, and I think we got to keep hammering this for our audience, but also for all those reasonable people that are listening to us. You talked about Buck at your at one of your weddings you went to. Guy who doesn't align with you politically said, hey, I've been listening to the show. I hear a lot of that.
Loves people. This show. It's his rationality bath for the mind.
Yes. There you go. And I think there are a lot of people out there that are so frustrated by the media. They want to pull their hair out when they see the way that stories are covered. And they may not agree with us on every political subject. And by the way, if you agree with anybody else on every political subject, you need to think a little bit more. You need to, like the idea that you're going to agree with anybody 100% of the time is pretty boring. We don't want you to turn into a communist like the people we're arguing against. But rational, reasonable thought here is turning against Fauci. And ironically, Buck, it may be something that has nothing to do with COVID, because there's no political angle at all on a lot of people saying, man, I don't know if I agree with experimenting on animals, not just puppies, but also different other animals in so vile of a way with American taxpayer dollars.
Right. And now when you add to this that there was NIH funding of the Wuhan lab, and it was doing gain of function research, this plays into a broader issue of, do we just have bureaucrats in the health services in this country who at places like CDC, NIH, who are funding things that are awful and reckless and a danger to us in the case of Wuhan without any real accountability or oversight? And that's what seems to be the case. This is what people are starting to wake up to. And this is why having honest and open debate, this is why the betrayal of free speech that has gone on in this country, not just by big tech, but by much of the scientific community who will go along with this stuff because they're scared, because they're indoctrinated, because a lot of them, unfortunately, are cowards. And then there are the doctors who I think are just feeling like if they speak out, they won't be able to see their patients. They'll lose their license. They have a duty to them. I'm very sympathetic toward that. I understand there's a lot of different ways that open debate and discussion has been shut down during the COVID pandemic. It has made all of this worse. And Governor Ron DeSantis standing up again, Clay, we've been saying, I mean, if you did a word search, and everything we say is cataloged, archived online, so people can always see. So when we say, oh, we said, you can go check. By the way, go to clayandbuck.com. You can see transcripts of the show. But we've been saying that it is completely unscientific, really anti-scientific, to have vaccine mandates that don't take into account natural immunity, right? Because now you're forcing people to get a shot, and there's absolutely no reason for them to be getting the shot, and you think you're the good guy, so to speak, for doing this. Here's Ron DeSantis, sounding a lot like somebody who listens to this show. Play two.
Well, first, I think it's important to point out, on a scientific basis, most of those first responders have had COVID and have recovered. So they have strong protection. And so I think that influences their decision on a lot of this, that they have already had it and recovered. And so they're making no accommodations for that. They're still pretending like that doesn't even exist. And so that's really, really troubling.
Natural
immunity.
And
they only do this for political reasons. Yeah.
I mean, and Buck, this is, I believe, one of the big challenges is going to be, and it's important to have this conversation, how does normalcy return? How do we land the plane and finally jettison all the people who have been screaming about needing to have masks on, about kids needing to be vaccinated, all these things? Like, how do we get back to a normal existence? And that's why I've kept hammering college football and NFL stadiums being full. I was at one on Sunday. I'm going to the World Series on Tuesday and Wednesday down in Houston. I'm going to be at the world's largest outdoor cocktail party, the Florida-Georgia game. I got a heck of a week coming up for me, by the way. It's pretty awesome. But that being surrounded by all these people that are saying, hey, we're getting back to normal. And I know a lot of you out there right now, parents and grandparents, with Halloween coming up on Sunday, you're going to be going door to door with your kids. They're going to be dressed up. You're going to be knocking on doors. You're going to be getting candy. It's going to feel normal. And I think that's the way, right? The pathway back is not by some governmental authority making a decision. Buck, it's by you and me and everybody out there listening to us just refusing to kowtow and live in fear anymore. Embrace normalcy in your own life, and other people start to see that normalcy, and slowly it spreads, dare we say, like a virus itself, a virus of normalcy in a world where they continue to want to treat us abnormally.
You could think of it like reverse incrementalism, but incrementalism in favor of freedom instead of in favor of
yes.
authoritarianism. And that's the way, it's by not snitching on the person next to you on the plane, not that this happened to me, for not having their mask up or whatever. It's by being the person who's supposed to enforce it, you know, on the floor of the casino, who says, you know what, I'm just going to let this guy enjoy walking past me without harassing him. If everybody stops with the madness, then the madness can actually stop. I think that's one way to view this. But Clay, I know you've got some thoughts for us on owning a home and financing it.
No doubt. A lot of homeowners out there don't believe a refi can save them money. But the reality is, trust me, it's true. You can save a bundle, especially with these incredibly low rates, still near historic lows. And they can save you a ton on a month-to-month basis, up to $12,000 a year. That's $1,000 a month. How much different could that be for you? As long as you go with the right lender, that's American Financing, the only lender we recommend.
Call American Financing at 800-777-8109. That's 800-777-8109. Or visit AmericanFinancing.net. American Financing, NMLS 182334, NMLSConsumerAccess.org.
Welcome back in. Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. Encourage you to check out the podcast. Search out my name, Clay Travis. Search out Buck Sexton. Go give us 5 stars. Make sure you don't miss a single minute. We're going to have a fun week of shows for you. Buck's starting off the week in Vegas. By the way, have you played any table games yet? Have you gambled at all since you got there?
Oh, I will definitely go and throw away some money at the blackjack table. Very little bit of money because, you know, still got to save up for that house. But, yeah, no, I don't understand the appeal of a lot of these different gambling games. I was going to say, I'm weird that way. I don't know what to say.
I like to play blackjack with buddies sitting around the table, and also with what drinks cost in a Vegas casino. At least I'm thinking to myself, hey, I'm going to make out, you know, at least probably break even on the drinks by themselves.
I think that is part of the calculus, because yes, they keep those drinks flowing to folks.
No doubt. And the smoking and everything else, as we were talking about. We haven't really discussed this, but it's been a monster story for, what, like the last 3 days or so, Buck. Alec Baldwin, while filming a movie in New Mexico, shot and killed I believe it's the director of cinematography, also shot and wounded another man who was involved in the filming there. And now there's a lot of discussion about what is going to happen to Alec Baldwin, how the shooting took place, whether there might be any criminal charges. Certainly, this is me putting my lawyer hat on, there will be many civil lawsuits before all is said and done relating to the wrongful death, and lots of money will be paid out, I would imagine, to the woman and her family. I believe she has a young child. But, Buck, you are pretty well-versed in firearms. You've been paying a lot of attention to this story. What happened? I think that's the question that a lot of people are asking.
So there are a number of factors that make this look really bad in terms of recklessness. I don't think anyone believes that Alec Baldwin wanted to do this. That's crazy. But it was an accident. But an accident with recklessness can still be a huge civil problem. And obviously there's ethical considerations that one has to take into account here with everything going on. So some basics. The armorer on this particular production, I think, was 24 years old and was known to be just reckless and not somebody who understands guns well. She was a young female armorer who did not understand firearms very well. And that was known. And there had been other problems with safety on set and other productions she had already been a part of. So why was she chosen for this? That's one issue. There's reporting that there was a walk off the set for safety reasons earlier on in the production. So it seems like this had already been plagued by issues. And then when you look at this, the fact that two people were hit, obviously he only fired this once and saw what happened. It was a bullet. I mean, initially there was all this, oh, look what happened to Brandon Lee, the son of Bruce Lee, who was killed filming the movie The Crow back in the 90s in North Carolina. That was a shard of a previous bullet, I believe, that was in the chamber and came out. So really a freak accident. This seems to be a hot round. This seems to be actually a gun that was loaded with a bullet because they had been using the gun for target practice, offset for fun out in the New Mexico desert. So now you've got people that are using a weapon, sometimes live round, sometimes not. I mean, that is highly, highly problematic. And then when you add to it, the most basic gun safety stuff. I mean, I remember, Clay, when we did, when I was with the federal government, we did firearms training. Even if you were in a classroom and you were using, guns that were essentially either squib guns or things that it's impossible for them to fire around. If you swept somebody with your gun, they would send you home. They would say, all right, you can come back in a few weeks when you learn gun safety. I mean, they were so strict about it all the time for exactly this reason. And all guns are always loaded. You have to be ready to destroy whatever you're pointing the gun at. You know where your finger is on the trigger. Keep your finger off until you've made the decision to shoot. These things are, they're seared into your brain for a reason to avoid a situation like this. It seems like this was recklessness. It was a tragic accident, but an accident along the lines of, you know, distracted driver who, you know, runs a few people over on the sidewalk. You didn't mean to run them over, but you should have been looking at your cell phone. You know what I mean? That's where I think this is going to get into a serious legal issue and legal battle. Obviously, you got one person killed, another. By the way, the fact that two of them were hit with one round, it was clearly a bullet. I mean, this wasn't the wadding from a blank. So that was, I think that was obvious in the beginning. A lot of people were writing about that incorrectly because they didn't know any better. So we'll see. But Alec Baldwin, look, then there's the part of this. Alec Baldwin is a left-wing bomb thrower. A lot of people hate this guy. He said horrible things about Trump. He's a nasty, nasty person to his political opponents. All that said, you know, there's a woman who's dead here. She was a mother, a wife. You know, I don't get into
it's
the,
hard to play politics the, if you're being honest in this situation. Alec Baldwin, for whatever his political beliefs may be, certainly we're going to give him a level of generosity and coverage probably that he wouldn't give to others, right? I mean, if this had been a Republican who had somehow been doing
he would
some
be
sort
mocking
of,
if you or I had been in this situation, he would be mocking us openly. But that doesn't mean that we should be who he is.
And we'll see what ends up happening from a criminal perspective. Again, the civil lawsuits certainly are going to be going on for years and years to come, I would imagine. But the criminal nature here, was it so negligent that there could be a manslaughter charge brought? That'll be a real challenge to figure out exactly that storyline. We got a bunch more to get to, including how is this monstrously large expansion of the federal government going to be funded? We got an idea, Janet Yellen and others weighing in, but I want to tell you about Tunnel to Towers. They're providing 200 mortgage-free homes to many different families out there with fallen soldiers or first responders in need, including Sergeant Nelson. We told you about Mario Nelson, signed up to be a member of the National Guard in 2001, just a couple of months before 9/11. His nature to volunteer, not long after he enlisted. Well, he and his wife had a newborn daughter, and they all left for Germany months later to the Middle East. And unfortunately, tragically, Mario never came back when he went to the Middle East. Tunnel Towers didn't forget about her or her plight. They provided her a mortgage-free home to raise their daughter in. Your donations made that possible. You need to donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at t2t.org. That's T, the number 2, T.org. Do it today.
What's going to be in the huge Biden bill that Congress may be passing here soon? We have some indications of what's going to be in it. I want to talk to you about that. Welcome back to the Clay and Buck Show. You have Senator Joe Manchin, who has been one of two bulwarks against the insane spending of their fellow Democrats. Now, keep in mind, we're still talking about a whole lot of additional spending over the next 10 years after you already had a $1.9 trillion Democrat rescue package passed earlier this year. Trillions and trillions of spending going on during COVID. Inflation getting to be the kind of problem that not even the Democrats can ignore. It's real. People see it. They feel it. They know. Plus, you've got supply chain snarls, millions of unfilled jobs, and a lot of anxiety, particularly in major cities across the country about what the winter is going to be like with COVID continuing to have pretty heavy numbers. Now, Manchin is closer to $1.5 trillion top line. Biden had a meeting with him recently trying to pitch him on, let's get it up to $2 trillion. So as we've known all along, they're haggling over the price. And it's going to be between $1.5 and $2 trillion. And the Democrats will, I believe, pass something here very soon. And then they'll be talking about what a huge success it is and how Biden's amazing and all the rest of it. So get ready for that. But what's some of the stuff that's actually in this? Well, they are talking about a tax on the wealthiest individuals in the country that will go after their holdings in the stock market. So this should be unrealized. So it's not stock you've sold, it's stock you have. And for the very, very wealthy, it's not clear exactly how they would implement this. And as we know, the devil is in the details. But here is Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen speaking about this proposed tax that would allegedly pay for the Build Back Better Act. Play 12.
I wouldn't call that a wealth tax, but it would help get at capital gains, which are an extraordinarily large part of the incomes of the wealthiest individuals. And right now, escape taxation until they're realized, and often they're unrealized, and at death benefit from so-called step-up of basis. So it's not a wealth tax, but a tax on unrealized capital gains of exceptionally wealthy individuals.
It's not a wealth tax, Clay. Just a tax on really, really wealthy people's stock transactions, or not even transactions, stock holdings.
Here's my problem with it, okay? Let me start with the big picture problem. Once you start taxing wealthy people's unrealized capital gains, eventually you open the door to taxing a lot of people out there who aren't anywhere near as wealthy's unrealized capital gains. Let's not exaggerate here. This is a radical change in the way that we are taxing people. And so the idea that we're suddenly going to implement this is, I think, a problem, because what have we found out about anything that the government implements that allows them to get more money? Eventually, they need more money, and they expand the overall number of people that can be impacted by this. That's problem number one. Problem number two is this is incredibly complicated. It's in general focused on the 700 wealthiest Americans, okay? So, and for people out there, a lot of you may not even spend much time thinking about capital gains. A capital gain, let's say that you bought a stock for $10, right? Let's say you bought a stock for $10 and that stock then increases to $20. You would owe a tax on the $10 to $20 when you sell that stock. If you have not sold that stock, then technically you have not realized a capital gain. It is only what's called a paper profit. So effectively what the government is doing is they are saying they are going to tax paper profits. That is unrealized dollars that are essentially sitting in your stockholder accounts. Okay, so here's the complicating factor with this. Only the 700 richest people are being impacted by this, Buck. We are designing a tax plan on the fly in short order. Biden wants it done before he leaves the country in the next few days, 6 days from now. Who would you rather bet on, Buck? The 700 wealthiest Americans being advised by the greatest tax attorney and accountants that exist anywhere in the world, being able to find loopholes to avoid taxation, or the federal government bureaucrats operating on a strict timetable, trying to come up with a radical and as yet never implemented before policy to tax the wealthiest among us? I am betting, Buck, on the cadre of brilliant people that are going to be advising the billionaires. This tax is not going to work. It's going to be a mess. We're going to spend years in litigation over whether it's even constitutional to tax unrealized capital gains. And in the meantime, we're already going to have spent that money, likely driving up substantially more deficits. This is not a zero cost basis, as Joe Biden continues to argue. I think we are buying a lawsuit, and I think we are buying a mess here as the American public, and I think we are setting a awful precedent by trying to tax unrealized paper profits, even if it's among the wealthiest, because eventually it's going to trickle down to a lot more of us.
Well, they've also done this overseas, Clay. They've tried a wealth tax. And to your point about what happens, the super rich evade it. They find a way. Or they just start, people say, oh, no, they can't because it'll be so straightforward. You have to pay this fee. Well, then they'll just invest in, they'll invest in real estate. And now what are you going to do? You're going to force someone to sell the property that they own. You're going to force them to sell the apartment building they're an investor in because of the unrealized upside gains. They will move their money around as they can because they have the super rich, which is what they're really talking about here, have not only the greatest army of accountants and lawyers imaginable, but also have the most options for where to put their money here in the States and all over the world. The Europeans tried this. I mean, the French had a wealth tax. It was between 1.5 and 1.8% of fortunes over 13 million euros. And guess what? It never got to be about more than 1% of tax revenue in France. People repatriated. They left. They moved to other countries. They moved their money to other countries. So as a socialist wealth redistribution scheme, it was just a lot of hot air, essentially. But what's even more concerning in this country is if you look at the history, and this is really instructive, look at the history of income tax in America, everybody. It started out as this is just on super rich people. That was how they sold it in the beginning of the 20th century. This is just for the super rich. It's never going to come after you. We'll use duties and excises and customs and other things to fund the federal government. Oh, no. Now you get that nice chunk taken out of your biweekly paycheck, all based on it'll just be on the ultra rich promise from about 100 years ago, by the way, a little over 100 years ago now. So that's what's happened. So this is why opening the spigot for the government of yet another mechanism of taxation, I think, is really concerning. But, you know, they may be able to get this one through because class warfare sells, right? Class warfare works. This is why Democrats do it all the time.
And I think you raised a really good point, Buck, because it's relatively easy at least to look at a stock price because we know every single day what the value of a property is on the stock market. But if you invest in real estate, if you invest in, a Major League Baseball franchise, if you invest in artwork, things that are not as tangibly easy to value. And oh, by the way, what happens if our stock market tanks and these guys lose billions of dollars? Are we going to somehow allow them to have massive tax credits based on their unrealized capital gains losses?
I mean, Clay, the $500,000 Hunter Biden painting that I now have hanging in my living room, as I hold this, it's going to increase in value over the years. So what are they going to force me to do? Sell my beloved Hunter Biden finger painting because of the 20% upside that in some fantasy world I may actually get from the obvious money laundering scheme that they're using here for the president of the United States' son. But anyway, that's something we'll come back to another time. I can assure you of that. What's the best discovery in the past month that I've had? The gear that I am now wearing from Tommy John. This is good stuff. I love it. The pullover tops, the undershirts, the underwear. It is top of the line when it comes to comfort. This is now everyday wear for me from Tommy John. This brand, this company started it all with the introduction of some of the world's most comfortable underwear.
Yep, Tommy John underwear. Hey, when you start off your day wearing Tommy John, you're that much more comfortable. You do everything better. Tommy John men's underwear, breathable, lightweight, moisture-wicking fabric within four times the stretch of competing brands. That's why Tommy John doesn't have customers with over 16 million pairs sold. They have fanatics, including us.
This fall, upgrade what's underneath with new Tommy John underwear. They look great and feel even better, and it's all backed by Tommy John's best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free guarantee. Get 20% off your first order at TommyJohn.com/buck. That's TommyJohn.com/buck for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/buck. See site for details.
Welcome back in. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us. We are rolling through final segment of the Monday edition of the program. Tomorrow you'll still be in Vegas, right, Buck? One more day in Vegas?
I will indeed. If you see a guy walking around with poofy hair and no mask on getting yelled at by security, probably boat shoes, come say hi. That's me.
And I'll be headed down to Houston for game one and game two of the World Series. I was just texting with a variety of people down in the Houston market who are excited about the World Series being there. So I'm looking forward to hanging out with a bunch of those people. We'll be in the studio Wednesday. I will be. But, you know, all of this insanity, you know, Obama accused the right of getting fired up about made-up culture wars. Meanwhile, we're in 2 weeks of the Dave Chappelle comedy special continuing to be a controversy where people are protesting and demanding that Dave Chappelle's comedy special be pulled off the air. Those are not right-wingers that are demanding that that take place. And social media continues to ban people for saying truthful comments. Representative Jim Banks, banned by Twitter for pointing out that Rachel Levine, now a four-star admiral, is not, in fact, the first woman four-star admiral because she was born a man and decided to change her gender. And that, just sharing that fact, got Representative Jim Banks banned by Twitter. That is an unacceptable fact to share on social media, which is crazy. And this also ties in with the attacks being leveled upon Dave Chappelle. Here's activist Ashley Preston on Netflix talking about the Dave Chappelle special.
So to be clear, this conversation is about equity in entertainment. And we see that there is a lack of equity with trans content versus content such as Dave Chappelle's. We know that Netflix paid him $23.6 million for the Sticks and Stones special in 2019. And for The Closer, he was paid $24.1 million, making transphobic content in the middle of one of the deadliest years on record for the trans community. And so this is about the emergence of a hate economy that incentivizes media that marginalizes.
This is insane.
This is insane. I mean, this is what the activists do. And Clay, if they had a real argument to make that wasn't rooted in hysteria, that wasn't rooted in, the deadliest, I would like to see the numbers here, the deadliest year for trans individuals. So we're supposed to think that that's because of Dave Chappelle's Netflix special. Obviously not. But this is the justification for the censorship and the totalitarian thought policing that people always have. They always say there's some good reason for why we can't allow you to have your thoughts. And this is the speech equals violence paradigm the left has been running with for a long time, which is just, you're seeing things now. They're trying to hammer through and force people to bend the knee to fundamental untruths, to lies. They want you to live by lies. They want you to say that a man is a woman. They want you to say that speech equals violence. Because if they can get you to do that, there's no limit to their control. If they can disorient all of us into thinking or into believing or even just going along with obviously untrue things, what limitation do they have, Clay, on controlling us in any respect?
Well, and Buck, we watched this comedy special, and my wife turned to me after we finished the comedy special and she said, did any transgender people who are protesting actually watch this special? I mean, because what Chappelle was doing was ridiculing much of the modern language that exists across a variety of spectrums, right? And one of the lines that stood out to me was he was talking about Caitlyn Jenner was named Woman of the Year in the first year that she had ever become a woman. And the analogy he made is like, hey, if the BET Awards gave Eminem Black Person of the Year Award, people would be like, oh, this is an outrage, right? Like, this is crazy. So the first year that Caitlyn Jenner decides she's a woman, she's the Woman of the Year. And the idea, look, and I think I can't speak exactly for you because I'm not sure your exact perspective. I don't think most people care what gender you want to identify as, right? If it makes you happier and you are a fully grown adult, I really just don't care at all. I don't think we ought to be giving hormones to kids who are 5 years old to try to change their gender. I think that's
so
crazy.
Wait, do you think we should call, do you think you should be forced to call a he, a she?
No, I'm saying, but if you make that choice in your own life, that's fine. But expecting that the entire world is going to bend to define you and use the pronouns that you choose and all of these other things. To me, this is about power, right? And I don't feel like the marginalized group is the one that has all the media behind them, that has all the major corporations behind them, that has all of the might of the intellectual left behind them. That's, and you're demanding that someone can't make a joke about you? These are what authoritarians do. I always used to talk about terrorists aren't probably very funny, right? Because absolutism is the enemy of humor. Maybe I'm wrong, and they sit around in Tora Bora back in the day, and they're telling all sorts of funny jokes.
No, I saw Al-Qaeda jokes back in the day. They're not funny. And so there's that. But I can also say that when you're looking at the, you're right about the power dynamics here, the power, you know, the paradigms of who's actually calling the shots. They're telling, they're straight, I mean, the trans activist community is trying to establish we cannot take a joke and you cannot make jokes.
Yes.
As the rule. And if you try to break this, they will ruin you. They will destroy your career. They will run you out of town. And then they turn around and say that, well, we're so oppressed.
Yes.
And
that's
remarkable that we are still having this conversation. Dave Chappelle is perhaps the most successful. There are a few names you can put in there. Comedian, period. Certainly among the most successful African-American comedians of his generation, but probably just comedian, you know, across all categories as well. And he still has to deal with this, and he has to kind of apologize and all the rest of it? Who has the power here?
Not only that, Buck, just leave you with this thought, and I always think it's a really massive way to think about it. If you choose your gender, like Rachel Dolezal did, it's super racist. If you choose your race, if you choose your gender, you're a hero. Isn't it harder to choose a gender, shouldn't it be, than to choose a race? Yet one is racist, the other one is heroic.
Just want to tell everybody, we have Zalmay Khalilzad. Speaking of Afghanistan, what's going on there? He was the chief negotiator and ambassador for the U.S. with the Taliban under both Trump and Biden. That's going to be a huge interview tomorrow on the show. Be sure to tune in for it.
You're listening to Clay Travis and Buck Sexton on the EIB Network.